He's going to destroy everything you hold dear. The reality, what to many cat guardians looks like a maddening effort on their cat's part to annoy, is a compulsive condition called pica. The definition of pica is the ingesting of non-food items, and if you thought the behavior itself was frustrating, the diagnosis is even more so. Whether it is a condition that has a genetic component, is present in part because of inadequate weaning or early social experiences, is a response to stress, or is a mix of all of the above, pica is still a huge question mark in the scientific community. We know that some breeds, namely Siamese and other closely related breeds, are more prone to wool-sucking behavior. The debate, however, is secondary to this. Pica is to a large degree mysterious. There is no known cure, and it can be very dangerous. Ingesting fabrics or other objects can be a life-or-death situation, and involve an expensive and risky surgery if materials become lodged or twisted somewhere in the digestive tract. Despite the lack of a cure, though, we must do our damnedest to manage it. Cat Nerd Corner. Paper or plastic? A 2016 study found a relationship between cats with pica and frequent vomiting. Pica cats tended to ingest shoelaces, thread, plastic, and fabric, while all other cats seemed to enjoy chewing on plastic and paper the most. Almost 70% of the control, non-pica cats, in the study chewed on non-food items, although they didn't ingest them, meaning chewing is common in all cats, not just cats with pica. The steps. 1. Do your cat detective work. When does the behavior happen? Is it when you are present or gone? Look at chewing locations and mark them on your Mojo map. These might be areas of high stress or frustration. What are the preferred targets? Certain objects, such as photo emulsion or plastic bags, might be attractive to your cat because they are rendered with animal fat. What textures or types of objects does your cat try to chew or ingest? 2. Protect your pica cat. Always start with a thorough vet check, including blood work, and make sure a dental or vitamin deficiency or digestion problem aren't contributing. Also, the self-soothing behavior that your cat is demonstrating can be because she is in consistent pain or discomfort. Finally, your vet may prescribe mood-stabilizing medication. Some medications have been moderately effective in reducing pica. 3. Commit to daily HCKE ritualized around food and energetic spikes. 4. Catify the areas you highlighted on your Mojo map. If an area presents stress, tried and true catification techniques can help neutralize that stress. 5. Encourage acceptable chewing options. Try high-quality, high-protein treats and cat grasses, placing them in areas identified as hot spots on your Mojo map. Crunching on something else may be helpful. Also, dog toys tend to be more durable than cat toys. Hard rubber puzzle toys, which can be stuffed with some type of food that motivates your cat, will keep his mouth busy on something that can't kill him. Of course, also consider the dangers of toys with hanging doodads made out of string, ribbon, or anything that can get wrapped around intestines, etc. It's obviously a trip to the ER waiting to happen. 6. Pica proofing. Put stuff away. You have to cat proof if you have a chewer. 7. Reward the silence. Sometimes humans forget to attend to the cat when they are doing anything besides chewing. Go back to Chapter 9 and think about ways you can give your cat attention without reinforcing the chewing behavior. The Mojo moment, in this case, is really about having done due diligence and knowing everything you can about pica, so that nothing takes you by surprise. Going through the steps has helped keep the things in your home safe from your cat, and you've incorporated all of the steps to the point that you've seen a decrease in chewing and an increase in your cat's confidence. For pica guardians, the Mojo moment is looking up from your book as you unwind and seeing your cat sitting in between a duvet and a puzzle ball and choosing the latter. Well done! Cord chewing, a special case. Cord chewing can be dangerous because your cat could get electrocuted or start a fire. Get cord wraps. Make sure they are solid, really hard plastic. Motion-sensitive air canisters can help. Every time your cat approaches these computer cords, the air blast happens and tells him, "There's no reason to keep going there." But you need a yes for that no. So lead your cat to a destination with cat grass or other chewable treats. Notes from the chef. My personal approach to pica is to take into consideration what we know and what we don't. For instance, pica, like many OCD-type behaviors, appears to contain a component of self-soothing mechanisms, like a human reaching for a cigarette or a drink, stress eating, or nail biting. Of course, the well-balanced human would turn to exercise or meditation, but my experience is that we gravitate back towards quick and easy ways to bring down the fever of radical discomfort. In certain cats, chewing helps make the stress go away. Self-soothing behaviors start early in life, when kittens are still on the milk line, and tendencies toward pica often appear when a cat is young. Of course, another component of obsessive behaviors is that they take on a life of their own. So while reducing stress is helpful, it's not everything. Like I said, frustrating for sure, but these steps have definitely provided some relief. That said, where there is mystery, there is opportunity. There is also support somewhere in the webosphere. Due diligence and reaching out, taking what you learn here and remembering that you know your cat better than anyone else. These are the ingredients for being an advocate for your cat. Established science will help us get a grip on conditions like pica, but so will you. Whatever you do and whatever you learn, please pass it on. Remember that there are so many other pica households out there suffering the same frustrations and potential losses that you have. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 10. Unhappy tails to you. The problem. Your cat hates his tail. He may hiss and growl at it or even attack it. Perhaps during these moments, he actually redirects that aggression onto you. Out of the blue and multiple times a day, he just turns into a skin-spasming, growling, howling animal. He becomes someone you don't recognize. He may even be ripping the hair off his tail until he bleeds. Maybe you've used the term bipolar, unpredictable, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, are just scary to describe him. Either way, you feel horrible for him and scared for his and your safety. The reality, this insidious and largely mysterious problem, is called FHS, Feline Hyperesthesia Syndrome, sometimes referred to as twitchy cat disease. The back lightening or skin rippling is particularly pronounced, and you may see muscle spasms throughout cats' bodies. Cats with FHS behave like a ghost is chasing them. They can be loving you, and then it's like a light switch is flicked, and they can, all of a sudden, turn and attack. Hyperesthesia makes cats feel like their body is attacking them. They may even be experiencing hallucinations. These cats might enjoy some petting, but their sensitivity is usually off the charts. Sometimes we can link FHS to a previous injury, and it's important to remember that the tail is an extension of the spine. It's already incredibly sensitive. But here's the deal. There is basically zero research on this. There may be multiple causes, including genes, stress, anxiety, sensory processing issues, trauma, skin problems, neurological problems. Basically, we don't know the underlying causes or how to fix FHS. But some cats do improve on a trial of painkillers or anti-seizure medication. It's the kind of thing that may require a lot of testing, x-rays, a visit to the neurologist, and lots of advocacy on your part. The steps. 1. Log episodes. Put on your detective hat and chronicle every attack. You need baseline observations. Note the symptoms and triggers. Where and when do attacks happen? What was going on in the house at the time? 2. Vid for vet. Take your cat to the vet and bring video so they can see what the behavior looks like. Discuss the right pharmaceutical assistance for your cat. 3. Control the energy. Energy spikes can trigger episodes, so be aware of the activity in the household and manage triggers whenever possible, the 3 R's, etc. 4. Encourage relaxation. Make sure there are cocoons and other safe places to retreat. 5. Catification, Cat TV, and HCKE. Utilize some of the Total Cat Mojo staples to give your cat other things to think about besides his tail. The Mojo Moment. Hyperesthesia isn't about a cure. It's really about management. As with pica, your mojo moment is one of peace in knowing what you're dealing with. You've done the research, and you've met others dealing with the same issue in online forums. But the moment arrives when your cat has realized that the tail, while still possibly slightly annoying, is not the enemy. Even if you succeeded in reducing but not eliminating the attacks, Each of these moments is a mojified one. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 11, the Over-Grooming Solution. The problem, your cat has taken her grooming regimen to a whole new level, and not in a good way. You notice that patches of fur are missing from her legs, or that she has a completely naked belly, all due to her incessant over-grooming. The reality, it's normal and important for cats to groom themselves, but some cats take it too far. Sometimes it starts with a flea allergy, a food sensitivity, or other skin condition. That licking that starts off as a way to relieve itching becomes habitual. In other cases, over-grooming could be a response to anxiety. For some cats, it can be a self-soothing behavior, like nail-biting in humans. There are possible clues to the cause. A cat who is licking all over is usually itchy. A cat who is licking in one particular area is more likely to be experiencing pain. For example, some cats with painful bladders will lick their bellies raw. The steps. 1. Vet time. Take your cat to the vet and rule out a dermatological or other medical problem. In some cases, cats who overgroom just need meds, plain and simple, to help support your other treatments. 2. Identify stressors. Address any stressors in the environment, be it a threat from within, such as conflict between companion animals, or a threat from without, see barbarians at the gate. Self-soothing mechanisms like over-grooming wouldn't be needed if the cat felt like she could deal with the stressors of everyday life. 3. Bump up your catification and HCKE. Finding an interactive toy that your cat loves is key. Not only can you just drain energy out of the energetic balloon every day, which will make your cat a little less likely to stop and groom, but the proper toy can help lead your cat away from targeting her own body. Notice the giveaway signs that she is beginning to lick herself, and redirect her into a small moment of play. Many times, that's all it will take to end a grooming session before it begins. 4. Lock in the house rhythm. Don't forget about the 3 R's. Any cat with anxiety will get security from routine. 5. Food. Another reason a cat will overgroom is due to an allergy. A systematic food allergy trial will absolutely help, but it's a commitment. Starting with a limited ingredient diet, and with a commitment from you and your family and friends not to sneak treats, an allergy trial has often led to amazing results. The mojo moment. This is an easy one, folks. Your cat still has her fur. Even if it's thin new growth, it's a sign that a corner has been turned and you have gained control of a very tricky problem. 18. When outside cats cause trouble for inside cats. There are moments of twin surprise that happen all the time between my clients and me. One of those moments is when I inform them that, because of the patterns of urination I see around the perimeter of their home, there must be outdoor cats, maybe ferals, that are causing serious stress. A look of shock comes over them, either because they know there was a colony nearby but didn't know they had anything to do with the problem, or because they had no idea there were any cats in the neighborhood, which, most of the time, they'll find out once I assign some detectivism homework. My surprise hits because, to me, it's a mojo basic, and I assume everyone knows that neighborhood cats can be territorial poison to indoor house cats. And then I think to myself, I should write a book. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 12. Barbarians at the Gate. The problem. A neighborhood community cat or four has taken an interest in your home turf and is creating territorial anxiety for your cat. They could be feral or free roaming. It doesn't matter. When this cat is around on the outside, bad things happen on the inside. The reality. Imagine that neighborhood cats are sneaking into your house, eating your cat's food, using his litter box, or the wall around it, and walking out again. Considering all we know about cat mojo and the sanctity of territory, we know that would be pretty catastrophic for your cat. Truth is, there's not much difference between that and cats circling the perimeter of your home. Cats don't recognize walls as boundaries in the same way that humans do. As long as they can smell the neighborhood cats, and as long as they can see them, they're just as much a present threat. The steps. 1. Cat detectivism. Historically, one of the hardest parts of this equation has been figuring out where these cats are coming from and knowing the angles they take into your yard, because you have to set up deterrents where they can actually be triggered. Setting up a motion-activated camera can remove all doubt as to where these cats are coming from, and allows you to set up traps so you can TNR, trap, neuter, return, and or place your deterrents and make changes or repairs to your fence to increase security. The technology of these cameras over the past few years has gotten so much more advanced that tricks that were considered high-tech and virtually unaffordable for most of us just a few years ago are completely within reach now. Some of these cameras, apart from just being motion-activated, have night vision, even ways to timestamp an event and save it in a separate file. They are also completely portable, needing only an outlet, and they hook into your Wi-Fi. Man, do I wish this stuff had been available to me in the early days of my practice. Detectivism has never been easier. While you're working on step number one, continue with the rest of these steps. 2. TNR power. One thing that requires more work on your part, but will save you years of aggravation, is TNR. If they're feral cats, get them TNR'd. If you're uninitiated to the process, finding a neighborhood group that does TNR and can help guide you through the process is a great first step. Either way, this is hands down the best way to eliminate the problem. Because as long as these cats are propagating, you'll always have a problem, and keeping them away becomes harder and harder. Also, TNR is, very simply, the right thing to do. For more information about TNR and how you can make a world safe for your community cat friends, check out www.jacksongalaxyfoundation.org. If the cats are walking around with collars and tags, it's okay to go to your neighbors and let them know the incredible damage that their cats are wreaking on your home. I've had that discussion with many a neighbor over the years, and as long as you don't go to their house waving your fist with veins bulging out of your neck, there's common ground to be found. 3. A room without a view. Although by no means a cure-all, sight blockers such as cardboard, paper, or window films designed for privacy can be placed in the windows where your cat can see the other cats. However, just because your cats can't see something, it in no way means that they don't know those guys are out there. If your windows are open, your cats can smell them a mile away. 4. Remove any allure to your territory. Why are those cats coming around? Usually, it's food or shelter. If you're leaving food outside your house, then you're setting up a buffet for the invaders. And as much as this pains me, and as much as it likely pains you, your territory has to be free of other cats if you're experiencing the symptoms of aggression inside your home. If you take care of ferals, move your feeding stations to beyond your property's lines, or at least to an area that is completely non-disruptive to your indoor cats. 5. Deterrence. Cayenne, orange peels, and eggshells aren't going to cut it. There are many products on the market that remotely squirt water, blast air, sound an alarm, or flash lights when movement breaks your cat's sight line. These are great tools, but they're not meant to be permanent. Think of them as training devices. The cats coming into your territory need to be reminded only so many times that every time they come in here, they get wet. As long as it happens every single time they come in, it shouldn't take that long to guide them to greener pastures. Of course, there's the downside. The common complaints are that these things go off every time someone walks by. You get wet, your neighbors get wet, or the UPS guy gets hit. We've actually had traffic setting off alarms in the middle of the night. But in my experience, it's well worth it. It's not permanent, and it usually helps get the job done. 6. Scent unsoaking. Wait for the sun to go down. Take your blacklight around the outside perimeter of your house and clean sprayed areas as you would clean any stain in your house. As you're ridding yourself of the outside threat, you can also tell if there are holes in your fence. You can go back and double-check any repair work with a clean slate. By doing that, you find out what areas have been hit more than others, what resources the cats might be claiming and guarding, and that is where you reposition your deterrence. 7. Vertical territory. Depending on who your cat is, putting vertical territory in the windows that he tends to get all crazy about can be a good thing. Oftentimes, you'll see the aggression happen when your cat is on the floor and he's face-to-face with the enemy. Having a crow's nest is a strategic boon for any cat. Being able to survey their domain completely keeps them a step ahead of their enemy. 8. A signpost to boost mojo. A litter box in these territorially vulnerable places can ease the territorial stress of a Napoleon. Signposts can forestall graffiti or redirected aggression, giving him that sense that, hey, I've got this area locked up. The mojo moment. Your backyard is now just that, and not a collection of battle lines. Your one-time Napoleon might be interested in cat TV, but not vigilant, running from window to window on high alert, building his moat. You might see cats pass through your yard occasionally, but you know them and their tendencies. They are neutered, and there is no reason for them to linger since their feeding station is at a safe distance. Your indoor cats are secure mojitos who aren't bothered to take up arms to protect what is theirs. An outdoor sanctuary. As I mentioned in Chapter 12, there is a growing number of guardians who are fencing in their backyards with new and very cool designs that keep their cats in the yard and other critters, including other cats, out. If you followed my recipe but the territorial frustration is still running in the red, think about this solution. Your cats get to go outside, feeling more secure about what they own, and at the same time expanding what is theirs exponentially. In the meantime, boundaries can be better enforced. As the old saying goes, tall fences make for good neighbors. 19. When your cat is a wallflower. Very early on in my emerging career with cats, I began gravitating towards the wallflowers. Especially in a shelter environment, the suffering I identified was unbearable to watch. Extreme fear in shelters was then, and in many cases today remains, a killable offense. I developed many of my techniques just to help get these guys off the ropes so that they could not only survive the process of moving through intake, evaluation, and adoption, but could do it while discovering their mojito-ness at the same time. I was determined that they would leave with more confidence than when we met. That rule stands to this day, whether in a shelter, a foster home, or a forever home. Of course, I'm not in any way unique. We all, to a certain degree, identify with and root for the undercat. Where we might differ is whether we cater to the fear by cloaking it in sympathy or whether we dare them to step into a different light. This recipe is about embracing the latter. Cat Daddy Recipe Number 13. The Blooming. The problem. Your cat is demonstrating one or many of the classic fearful wallflower behaviors, as outlined in Chapter 5. She may be spending most, if not all of her time, invisible, in hiding spots like closets, cabinets, on top of appliances, under the bed, or even inside the box spring of your bed. Wallflowers head for the hills whenever strangers enter the territory, or even when somebody they know moves too fast. For a constellation of reasons, yours may not feel safe coming out into the open until everyone is asleep. If you do see her, the one thing she never demonstrates is confidence. Part of the problem that needs to be addressed here is human collusion. It's a combination of sympathetic intentions and, let's face it, the fact that wallflowers are the least squeaky wheel in your home, and so the problem tends to disappear with the cat. Many guardians tend to normalize the scaredy cat behavior of their wallflower. This is her favorite spot, her hidey hole. She's just more comfortable in the closet. It's okay, he uses the litter box, but only after everyone goes to bed. To be clear, hiding all the time is not normal and shouldn't be dismissed as being okay. In order to address the problem, it has to be recognized as a problem. The reality. Cats may be wallflowers due to their genetics, a lack of early socialization, threats in the environment, or a combination of these and other factors, although being a wallflower is often perceived to be their personality. The goal is to allow your wallflower to be the best version of himself. But first, we need to remember that there is no cookie-cutter result in terms of what his greater self looks like or how long it will take to get there. This is much more about natural change that will occur in the time it should when you apply the steps and are unflinchingly honest with both your cat and yourself. Your job is to provide love and comfort, but not in the hiding spots. You have to challenge your cats. If it's left to them, wallflowers will spend the rest of their life disappearing because it works for them. At some point, you're going to have to say, this isn't going to work for you anymore. And in reality, it never did. The steps. 1. Mark your mojo map. When you take a hard look at where your cat spends his time, that will tell you just how small his world might be by identifying his unconfident wares. It will also help you determine what some of the causes of the small living might be. In some cases, wallflowers are forced into a life of seclusion due to conflict with other animals in the home. At the same time, look for small indications of dwelling spots, of confident wares. Then you will create destinations as you help him cross his challenge lines. Your job here is detectivism. The map, at this point, helps you to keep to just the facts, ma'am. 2. Identify your wallflower's challenge line. Now it's time to start applying the facts that you are gathering. Look at your map and look at your cat. For instance, if your cat has one specific hiding place, use painter's tape to mark your cat's challenge line, where you see your cat hesitate, beyond which he will just not venture. Put a bowl of food right at that line. Tomorrow, you'll move that bowl a few inches out. Then you reset the line by tiny amounts day by day. Find his jackpot treat and hold it back at all other times except when his challenge line is being pushed. Your cat will welcome the challenge because on the other side of the challenge is this great reward. 3. Revisit your challenge line. In Chapter 9, we talked about your challenge line and the importance of always putting the best interests of your cat first, even as you feel those pangs of guilt when you watch your wallflower experience a few growing pains. Stay the course here. Think about the rewards and what is on the other side for him. A better life. 4. Stop living in the underworld. Applying lessons learned about your challenge line, start getting serious about theirs. As an example, please don't feed your cat under the bed. You can give your cat love and comfort, but just not there. To help your wallflower, you have to lay down a series of gentle but actual challenges, including closing off the spaces that represent caving. Blocking off the unders, however, is a gradual process. See Chapter 8. Don't remove everything all at once. Say you start with blocking off under the bed. Chances are that if your wallflower caves under the bed, she goes all the way back under the headboard. That's where you start blocking, at the heart of the cave, gradually moving out until the bed is no longer a caving destination. Research tells us that it is critical that cats have safe spaces in which to spend time. While blocking off those unders, you can give your cat cocoons that allow him that same sense of safety without the ego-deflating choice of life under a bed. 5. Expand their territory, bit by bit. One of the most useful tools we have for our wallflowers is base camp. Set up base camp like I outlined in Chapter 8. Make that room as pleasant as possible using scent soakers, cocoons, perches, tunnels, and of course items that share your scent. While challenging your cat to come out from caving, you are presenting a closed environment that she will find safe and will marinate with her scent slash mojo. Then, using base camp expansion, Chapter 8, you enlarge the world but keep it just as safe as before. Basically, you want to expand her turf bit by bit, spreading her scent throughout the home as if it were new territory. 6. Catification. Allow the territory to become your wallflower's friend. Both when setting up base camp and beyond, add features that allow your cat to move around in those comfort zones while you gently push his challenge line. Get your cat into the vertical world with a superhighway using the basic techniques outlined in Chapter 8, demonstrating to him that he can move from that place of fear into a more confident world. 7. HCKE. Play therapy is critical for wallflowers. The math is simple. When they pounce on that toy, they own that spot. Ownership of territory equals cat mojo supreme. Unleash the mojo. Encourage your wallflower to play, paying special attention to providing small, quiet, interactive toys if that's what he likes best. The mojo moment. With wallflowers, it's really about the journey and not about the destination. For me, with my cat Valoria, it was a big deal the first time I came home and she was sleeping on the bed instead of in one of her cocoons. That was when she was about 6 years old. That may seem like a long time, but as I developed my approach with her, yes, she is the original wallflower, I noticed improvements that kept me going. For each wallflower, it's really about being the most mojified version of herself possible. She might always be shy, but you'll find her having more and more mojo moments. And that cocoon has allowed your cat to truly transform into a butterfly. Getting comfortable with visitors. Progress with wallflowers requires consistency and daily work to gain their trust. 1. Have people call instead of ringing the doorbell. Many cats learn that the doorbell is a precursor to something scary. Instead, go out and walk back in with your visitors and give your cat a jackpot treat. You can also use basic desensitization techniques like the one I outlined in Cats and Kids, Chapter 11. 2. Visitors should not attempt to interact with wallflowers on their first visit. They can just come in and do nothing. A gentle approach is important. Revisit the three-step handshake and the slow blink. 3. Another helpful technique is what I call the Santa Claus effect. Every single time a human comes to the cat's home, he must bring the cat a Christmas gift. Have people other than you feed your wallflower dinner and play with her. Every time somebody comes over, it's Christmas. Cat Daddy Dictionary. The handoff. When cats are afraid of strangers or seem to swipe at everyone except their guardian, you can use the guardian's insider status with the cat to help widen the cat's circle of trust. Being fearfully defensive toward people can shrink a cat's world because other humans will just stay away. That creates a vicious cycle of isolation, and that can lead a cat to become overly attached to the one person they trust. The handoff technique can help break that cycle. It starts with that trusted human, guardian, teaching other people how to touch his cat. As the guardian pets the cat, the new human should slowly and quietly get closer while the cat is in a relaxed state, eventually replacing the guardian's hand with hers. This widens the cat's circle of trust, but keeps the cat feeling safe because the guardian is right there. The social bridge. Some wallflowers benefit from having a social bridge, a mojito cat who can act as a bridge between that shy cat and other cats or humans in the home. Wallflowers will follow the leader when they can see another cat demonstrate play and confident behavior, and may start testing out some of those relaxed behaviors themselves. 20. When your cat is thinking outside the litter box. If you've opened the book to this page, you are probably hoping for a chapter that takes all litter box problems, bundles them up in a Cat Daddy cookbook, and gives you recipes that you can flip to in moments of need, like this one. And at least in my opinion, that unicorn doesn't exist. Wait, don't close the book. Let me explain. No matter who you are and where you find me, whether it's on social media, during a Q&A session, in line at the supermarket, it doesn't matter. If you say, "Jackson, I have a problem with my cats and their litter box," I can guarantee that 15 minutes later, you'll still be explaining the problem. Then I'll be answering for another 30, after which I'll shrug my shoulders and ask you to take me to your home. If I had a nickel for every time I was approached to write a quick how-to or a top 5 reasons your cat won't use his litter box, I'd be a dead millionaire, because I'd shoot myself. If I've done my job right in this book, you have in front of you all the tools you need to successfully address the 15-minute question you were about to ask me. You should also understand by now that no matter how deep the toolbox and how many tools are in it, we are talking about your cat, in your home, among your family, both human and animal, and the cat's cradle of relationships that links it all together. In other words, when it comes to litter box issues, there are simply no stock, one-size-fits-all solutions that I can pull out of my magic bag and hand to you. If there were, I would use them myself, every time. Instead, I show up for work. Using the same toolbox I gave you, well, guitar case for me, the same tools, and the fine total cat mojo tradition of cat detectivism, I still have to work through the process of elimination to try to piece together clues at the scene of the crime. After 20 years of doing this, it remains a challenge, and I still have to return to the proverbial drawing board sometimes, reassess the data, and try again. Of course, the good news is that there is help to be had. Solutions are there for you. The most important part of this chapter, and the fine art of litter box issue resolution as a whole, is not the fix itself. The most important part is taking the journey with your cat family that I take every day of my life. The journey from question mark to period. It begins with discovering unhappy surprises in the form of pee, poop, or both, somewhere besides where they are supposed to be, and coming completely unglued, suddenly drowning in frustration and helplessness. And it ends with knowing why. Now bear with me. I believe that if I gave you one magical direction and it worked, you'd be worse off. It's like how I, along with probably 50% of the male species, fix any household thing that breaks with duct tape. So now my sink doesn't leak anymore. Despite my boasting to the contrary, I didn't fix anything. I now just have a broken sink wrapped in duct tape. So, as we go through this chapter, even though you will actually have ample opportunity, I'm asking you to step away from the duct tape. Show up for your cat and yourself by doing the actual work. Remember, the pee or poop or both isn't the problem, it's a symptom. Holding the root of the disease in the palm of your hand is the goal. Then you'll address the symptoms, and you'll gain the key to the Cat Mojo Kingdom along the way. The process of elimination. I want to stay as true to my actual process as I can with you. If I came to your home, and the only information at my disposal was that there was a litter box issue, this is where we would begin. It's safe to say that you have a very real sense of urgency about the situation. After all, you called in a professional to help, and to some degree or another, your home and your family's sanity are both taking a hit. My sense of urgency comes from the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, any extracurricular litter box incident is a symptom of a cat's dis-ease. There is some suffering going down, and resolving it ASAP is the goal. So the process here is to start in the shallowest part of the investigative waters and begin to wade in. The goal is to strike pay dirt in the shallows, which is to say find solutions in the place where detectivism is done with broad strokes. In many cases, we can not only wrap up the issue pretty quickly, but also prevent it from returning because it was an open and shut case. It may be, however, that the problem doesn't fit neatly into a category, or it's more deeply entrenched, or both. In that case, we just go into deeper waters. Then the only thing you'll need in that case is patience, because the deep water tools will be here for you as well. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. The process of elimination always begins with the why. Litter box problems. The big why. I group litter box issues into three primary umbrella categories. They are, 1. Territorial stress. In mojo-centric thinking, it would stand to reason that most litter box issues have a territorial component to them. Whether the threat is real or perceived matters little. As we've seen with so many other problems that we've addressed, if the mojo is missing, there will be some pissing. Included under this category would be A. Threats from within. Broken or non-existent relationships, either with other animals or humans, as well as changes in the established rhythm of the territory or the territory itself, will threaten the mojo balance. B. Threats from without. A feeling that the threat is causing the territory to shrink from the outside in. 2. Litter box aversion. Here, the choice is not to eliminate in strategic places outside of the box, but rather to eliminate any place but the litter box. Physical issues, trauma of various shapes and sizes, preference in design or substrate, or issues with other inhabitants of the territory can all contribute. 3. Medical issues. There can be a number of physical maladies that trigger eliminating outside the litter box. Left untreated, many of these can lead to, or serve as an indication of, more serious health risks. Of course, I should point out here that I always recommend a visit to the vet, without fail, at the first sign of any litter box issues. More on this in a moment. With these three issues in mind, let's now proceed to the fastest path to resolution. Starting with the where. The fastest track I know to take an educated shot at a solution is to consider location first. Perimeter. Where it is. Against exterior walls, under windows, around doors that lead outside, including the door that leads to the garage. Why it's likely happening. Territorial stress. If your cat is perimeter marking, that is, targeting the perimeter of the house, this typically indicates territorial stress, a Napoleonic response to a perceived threat. Something is coming at him from outside, usually other cats. This is my castle, so I'm building a moat. How to fix it? Barbarians at the gate. See chapter 18 on identifying the exterior threat and what to do to restore balance. Other info. In most cases, it would be spraying as opposed to peeing. The key distinction is that peeing is what you're used to seeing, and spraying or marking is when they back up to a vertical surface and blast away. Middle of the room. Where it is. On the floor but away from the walls, either in the open or under a table or chair. Why it's likely happening. Territorial stress. It's likely that your cat is living in fear of somebody in the house and is being bullied. Being under the table, for example, gives him a 360-degree view of the entire room. He can pee someplace where he knows that in cat chess terms, he won't get checkmated while he's trying to pee. How to fix it. Check out Bullies and Victims in Chapter 14. Catification tips. Make sure litter boxes have multiple exits and don't give your cat a covered box with the only opening facing the wall. In other words, avoid dead ends and ambush zones. Bathroom. Where it is. In the bathtub or sink. Why it's likely happening. Litter box aversion. Most often, it has something to do with the substrate itself. Bottom line is that the tub and sink are cool, smooth surfaces. The litter does not feel good on their paws, so they go for something smoother. Of course, this may lead to medical issues. This is a behavior I see so often in declawed cats because they are experiencing an associative / phantom pain, or because they're older and arthritis has set in either in or around their paws. How to fix it? For this situation, or any time a cat has formed a negative association with a litter box, it's possible for a new relationship to be built. See Reintroduction to the Litter Box later in this chapter. Personal belongings. Where it is. On the personal belongings of someone in the household, like clothing, a purse, shower mat, or even a baby crib. Why it's likely happening. Territorial stress. This is often the result of what I call critical mass. Most often seen in multi-animal homes, your cat's inner Napoleon comes out as the family grows by one more being, animal or human. Whether it's a foster, an adoption, the birth of a baby, or a new boyfriend or girlfriend who starts spending the night, he decides enough is enough. He feels territorially threatened and claustrophobic and has to make a land grab, and he does it by planting a flag made of pee in belongings with the new being's scent strongly in them. How to fix it? This is a territorial cry for help, as many of these extreme behaviors are. First things first, decrease the pee by increasing the space. Go back and read Chapter 8 on catification. Also, read up on the nature of your Napoleon cat. Finally, in Chapter 19, we talked about the Santa Claus effect, which is basically all about getting the targeted person back in the good graces of the peeing cat, so that a positive new association can be made. Conversely, now is the time to step away from the perceived emotions of the storyline. In other words, it is at times like this that we decide the cat hates fill in the blank. But in reality, it's what he feels insecure and anxious about, not who he hates, is jealous of, etc. Doorways. Where it is. In or near doorways within the house, connecting rooms to hallways, etc. Why it's likely happening. Territorial stress. As I've always said about catification, if you don't have enough in the way of signposts, the insecure cats will compensate with graffiti, literally tagging places with urine to signify that they own the area or the area past the doorway. And yes, in true tagging fashion, this will be done via spraying instead of just urinating on the floor. But there are always exceptions. How to fix it? Catification first and foremost. Make sure there are enough signposts throughout these areas, not just in the doorways, but in the area through the doors that apparently is significant for the cat to overown. Also, this may call for heavy-duty scent soakers instead of just beds, etc. Putting a scratching post near the pee spot, or ideally a litter box, will help matters. Don't forget, tagging is a symptom of anti-mojo. Detectivism is called for to get to the root of the problem beyond the quick fix. Major furniture pieces. Where it is. Beds, couches, chairs. Major human scent soakers. Why it's likely happening. Territorial stress. Most often misinterpreted as, he hates me since he pees on my side of the bed. Think of this as the backhanded compliment. When home, like it or not, we will be in or around two scent soakers more than any others, the couch and our bed. Your cat peeing in those spots is the opposite side of the mojo coin from a mojito's gesture of rubbing up against you or your belongings, leaving his scent on it. This does the job also, but from a completely insecure place, as opposed to, I love and own you. This says, I love you and I'm desperate to own you because someone else does or I'm afraid they're going to. Similarly, we will see land grabs like this when there is intercat animosity afoot. How to fix it? Go back and reread the section on Napoleon cats to see which aspect resonates with your cat in your home and use the tools to build up that mojo. Catification always helps diffuse situations like this. Also, use the no/yes technique from Chapter 9, with the no being that piece of furniture and yes being scent soakers next to it, like beds, cat trees, and scratchers. Additional note, just remember that with objects of distinct texture, there could always be elements of medical issues and or litter box aversion. If a quick pass through this fix doesn't take, explore the other paths before moving on. Cat furniture. Where it is. Major cat scent soakers, that is, cat beds, towers, perches, and scratching posts. Why it's likely happening. Territorial stress. This is classic anti-mojo graffiti. There is usually competition, or the perception of it, on the part of the culprit. This competition could be with other cats or dogs, and sometimes kids. Besides just being an expression of over-ownership, a classic Napoleon maneuver, it can also be a desperate wallflower move as she perceives that every other valuable piece of property has been taken or kept from her. How to fix it? Go back to Chapter 5 and read up on our cat archetypes. Fixing the problem begins and ends with knowing where the anxiety originates, not just which cat is doing it. More high-value scent soakers can also help. Clearly, the target has value either because of its location, texture, or popularity. Let the cats know that there are plenty of similar pieces they can own as well. If there is aggression between animals in the home, also consider the reintroduction technique outlined in Chapter 14. Vertical surfaces. Where it is. Tables, stoves, countertops, etc. Why it's likely happening. Territorial stress. As with any of these locations, there can be many factors at play. But in this case, it usually happens in a classic bully-slash-victim scenario. Either the victim doesn't feel safe on the floor and or in the litter box because she is constantly getting ambushed and chased, or she is on the losing side of cat chess checkmate. The victim-slash-wallflower goes vertical to get a better lay of the land so she can finally go in peace, or she is chased vertically and pees-slash-poops because, in part, it was scared out of her. How to fix it? Clearly a 911. Separate the warring parties and begin the complete reintroduction technique from Chapter 14. Extra note. Other signs of territorial stress that don't necessarily have to do with verticality of the location. A. When the pee or poop happens in a trail and not just in one place, as the victim is being chased, or is running because she was ambushed and assumed she was being chased, she will just release her bladder or bowels or both as she runs. B. A mix of hair with the excrement tells us that a fight was happening and bladder and or bowels were voided during it. Near litter box. Where it is. Within 2 feet of the litter box. Why it's likely happening. Litter box aversion or medical issue. Again, this is one of those things that as soon as I see it, I know what's going on. Of course, I've been wrong, but with this one, not so often. When there is a negative association with the box itself, most often because there is a pain issue involved with eliminating, the cat in question doesn't think to himself, "Damn, it hurts when I pee." He thinks, "This place hurts me." And with that logic, why go back? He knows that's where he should go, so he gets as close as possible. This also goes for cats who have started the habit of eliminating while standing so close to the edge of the box that the poop or pee winds up on the floor. Same avoidance. How to fix it. See the Back to Basics section up next for the surface preference part of the equation. Also, this is a reminder once again to get to the vet to make sure that while we are working on a behavioral track, your cat is not raising the yellow flag. Once a diagnosis is made, then see litter box reintroduction tips later on in this chapter as well. Back to basics. If you didn't have much resolution from starting with the where, no worries. This is a process after all, so we forge ahead. Next stop, the basics. First, review our 10 litter box commandments and make sure you're on board with a lot of them. I've seen litter box issues go away immediately just from the implementation of one of these suggestions. Cat Daddy's 10 litter box commandments. Quick view. See the full explanations of the commandments in Chapter 8. Thou shalt have one box per cat plus one. There should be one litter box for every cat in the house plus one extra. For example, if you have two cats, you'll want three litter boxes, etc. Thou shalt have multiple well-placed stations. The boxes should be located where they work best for your cat, not you. Thou shalt not camouflage the king of scent soakers. I only recommend unscented litter with no deodorizers in the litter and no air fresheners right next to the box. Same thing goes for other forms of camouflaging, that is, disguising your box as a potted plant, etc. Thou shalt observe the law of litter common sense. When keeping raw cat preferences in mind, litter common sense calls for the simplest choice. The fancier the substrate, the more that can go wrong. Thou shalt not mindlessly fill the box. Overfilling the box is a common problem simply because we think that more of a good thing will just make it a better thing. Not true. Try starting with just an inch or two of litter and adjust from there. Thou shalt honor the right box. The box should be attractive and convenient. In other words, a friendly place that your cat won't think twice about getting into. The length of the litter box should be at least 1.5 times the body length of your cat. Thou shalt not cover. Lids can lead to ambush zones and dead ends, especially in a home with dogs, kids, or other cats. Covers can get pretty nasty after repeated use and are hard to clean. Also, long-haired cats or larger cats can get a static shock from touching the sides of the hood as they enter or exit. Thou shalt not use a liner. You might think that liners make your life a bit more convenient, but in reality, many cats don't like the texture of liners and can even get their claws stuck in them. Thou shalt keep the litter box clean. Cats unquestionably prefer a clean box to one that contains clumps of pee or poo logs. Thou shalt allow your cat to covet another box. The best way to find out what your cat likes in a litter box is to give him choices of size, style, location, types of litter, track what he uses, and adjust accordingly. Next, review these. Cat Daddy's Big Three for Litter Box Mojo. One of the first things I ask a client who's been dealing with litter box issues is to go back in time to when the peeing outside the box first began and simply ask, when did it start and what could have possibly changed in our lives around that time? Changes with the litter box. An obvious place to start would be with the actual litter box. Did you change any aspect of it, from the type of litter to the location to the box itself? If so, see if you can determine what your cat is missing about the old box and try to go back to what was working. Changes in routine. Did you get a new job or lose an old one? Did school start back up? Did you begin or end a major relationship? Basically, anything that would cause you to spend either more or less time at home will change the rhythm of the home, which gets back to the all-important three R's. See Chapter 7. Re-establish a reliable rhythm. Changes in relationships, comings and goings, new humans, new animals, cat or dog, a new infant, any of these additions could bring about a seismic shift in the home dynamic, especially if proper introductions or ongoing dynamics had been slighted. See Chapter 10 for animal relations and Chapter 11 for human relations, covering all ages. Relationship harmony on the home front could ease any territorial stress and get things back in the box. Advanced detectivism, when cases are not open and shut. The examples I've given here are what I would consider the broad stroke solutions. Sometimes the litter box problems that are being experienced fit neatly into a category. Most of the time, however, they don't, at least not entirely. That's the folly of trying to write a handbook of sorts when it comes to complex behavior problems. While I firmly believe in all of the high-level detectivism pieces in our process, there are an infinite number of variables involved once we plug these formulas into your home. It's not just about the cat who has the problem. It's also about the other players, human and animal. It's about the history of your family, the family's current dynamics, the complexities specific to your territory. So then, what if you have pee in a variety of our where areas throughout the house involving more than one why category? Welcome to my world! Of course, just because you didn't get a complete answer to your cat's issues in the shallow waters is no reason to despair. I would say that at least 50% of the homes I've worked in, especially multi-animal homes, contained a sort of hybrid diagnosis and resolution. This is where we have to take our detectivism to the next level, get crafty with our powers of deductive reasoning, compile evidence from multiple vantage points, and truly engage the process of elimination. And one of our best tools for going deep into the issue involves bringing in the Mojo Map. As introduced in Chapter 8, The Mojo Map is basically a blueprint of your house that details your cat's physical world. Where things are placed in each room, where the litter boxes are, how traffic flows for both humans and animals, and, as is relevant for our cat detectivism here, where fights and confrontations have broken out, and where outside-the-box activity has occurred. The first step is to prepare the map exactly as you would have in the catification section. Use different colors to represent where fights have occurred, where peeing/pooping has occurred, where your cats like to congregate, favorite resting spots, litter box locations, food stations, and favorite locations to play. Think back to the anti-treasure map in Chapter 11 and how the information was gathered. We will employ the map here just as we did then. The results take a little time to reveal themselves. Remember, it does take time for our cat's actions to present a pattern. But that's the beautiful part of this way of working. My clients never fail to connect the dots as they go through a week or two of recording the comings and goings, so that a detailed macro view of the terrain emerges. It is then that we arrive at a critical point in our advanced detectivism process. Things we initially saw as random occurrences, we now see as reliable patterns. More Cat Daddy Litter Box Mojo. Yes, there is a whole lot of information when it comes to a cat's relationship to her litter box, as I'm sure you've deduced by now. It is, after all, the primary scent soaker, and for her, a core component of her territory, and in turn, of her mojo. The following tips, tricks, and techniques are absolutely key when it comes to rounding out your cat know-how, and in turn, your cat mojo. Schedule an appointment with the vet. I don't mind being a broken record about this one. If you were to call and ask me to come to your home for a consult, I would schedule it far enough out that you would have time to go to the vet first. If I'm told that you had your cat's annual exam a few months ago and everything was fine, I would send you back, because a checkup isn't an exam with a purpose. An exam as part of my consultation is a true tip to tail. A CBC, complete blood count, with a thyroid level is important, as is urinalysis, if dealing with a urine issue, or fecal exam, if it's a poop issue. Not to keep draining your bank account, but I may even send you back to the vet after our initial consult. One thing your vet doesn't have the benefit of seeing is how your cat moves around the home territory. How he walks, uses stairs, gets in and out of the litter box, etc. Incidentally, this is one of the reasons I absolutely recommend trying to find a house call vet in your area. The blood panel will reveal signs of diabetes, renal issues, hyperthyroidism, even cancer. All things that can distinctly and suddenly affect behavior as it damages the body. In my years of work, I have seen an abscessed tooth cause extreme aggression and a broken tail or impacted anal glands cause months of litter box avoidance. Cats hide pain. It's part of the raw cat makeup. We must make sure that while we are working a course of dedicated behavioral detectivism, your cat isn't raising the yellow flag the whole time, saying, "Ow," and not, "I really hate your new boyfriend." Common signs of medical issues. Vocalizing while in the litter box. The poop and run that often indicates pain or discomfort. Small, marble-like poop nuggets are conversely soft stool that looks like pudding. Really stinky poop. Blood in the urine. Dark, crystallized urine. Reintroduction to the litter box. A cat who has had a traumatic experience with a litter box, whether the root of that trauma is medical, behavioral, or a combination of the two, cannot be expected to just jump back in the saddle once the problem is resolved. It makes sense. Let's say you take the subway to work every day. Suddenly, you hit a stretch where the train derails, not just once or twice, but 6 times in a row. I think it's a safe bet you'd start walking to work, and it would take quite a bit of effort to get you back on a subway. The best way to reintroduce your cat to a litter box is to present her with choices so that she can make the least scary one. Keep the old box for sure, but add a few more that look nothing like the original in terms of shape and feel. I've used everything from cookie sheets with puppy pads on top, to round boxes, corner-shaped boxes, and Rubbermaid containers meant for storage, all with different shapes, different textures, different appearance, different height. Just plain different. Try the same litter in the old box, but also a completely different one in the new boxes. Keep the consistency the same, but each brand has a unique feel to your cat. Steer away, as I always recommend, from scented litters, crystals, or, in my opinion, anything clay. There are now an absolute multitude of natural litters out there. In general, I'm not a fan of boxes with lids on them or liners in them. As I said,